I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer Jimmy Israel, with us from Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar, senior editor of the Islamic Monthly and founder of themuslimguy.com, joins us from Chicago. From New York, Pablo Torre, senior writer with ESPN. And here in Washington, D.C., Michael Steele, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee and the former lieutenant governor of Maryland. Take it away, Jimmy.
Wow, the gang's all here.
That's
right. Thanks,
that's
what's Michelle.
Up. The gang is here.
It's the 18th.
Yo,
that's it.
Right.
Spread out around the globe.
The man of steel. Welcome back. And fellas, everybody, welcome to the shop. How are we doing?
What's up?
Hey,
good.
Hey, it's cracking.
Doing well, man.
All right. Well, there's something cracking. You know, there's this Texas teen who... he killed four people in a drunk driving accident, escaped a jail sentence this week. His lawyers claim he suffered from affluenza, Michelle?
Yes. This is a term which it's interesting because I've been hearing this term, like if you're in school world, like if you do any work around independent schools, you've heard this term a lot in recent years, but I've never heard it outside of that context, you know, before. And the defense argued that, and I'll just tell you this, that at NPR, we are not choosing to name him because he was prosecuted as a juvenile. That is our general rule here. So that has, although it's, you know, other news outlets have named him, it's easy to find out his name if you wish, but that's the decision at NPR. And that their defense was that his wealthy parents did not cause him or require him to suffer consequences for his actions. And this is a clip of his psychologist, Dick Miller, who explained the term this way.
It's just a saying that I've used for 20 years to say you have too much and you don't know how to distribute it. Affluenza is not exclusively for the rich. I think it's for anyone. And you see it in our society in eating and all sorts of ways, you know, in finances, generally across the board.
So there you go, Jimmy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This sounds like something. This sounds like something Brett Easton Ellis came up with. Holy crap! This is something. I wonder if this. Is this like being ghetto too? Is it like if you're poor and do those rules work in reverse?
Slang that isn't necessary.
Well, perhaps. But what I'm getting at is. A wrong is wrong, right? It, no matter how much money you have, you certainly know the difference between right and wrong.
Well,
Michael Steele, you seem to want to jump in here.
Oh,
go
yeah,
ahead.
I do, because this is the all dumbest right. thing I've ever heard. Maybe if you're poor, you have poor bubonic plague or something, you know? What is affluenza? You know, folks come up with stuff to excuse crap that they don't know that they need to be responsible for. So I just think it's important that we recognize the kid killed two people.
Four people.
And that there are consequences that attend to that. And so they give him 10 years probation, which means he'll say, even if they'd given him to 20 years under the law, he would have been out in two, but he would have been in jail. He would have realized that there are consequences. Now you just realize, oh, okay. I got probation.
Well, for a long-term inpatient facility? I mean, I have to ask it because I understand that a lot of people are outraged at this across the political spectrum, but we've done a lot of reporting on criminal justice issues, and the argument is, look, that this country incarcerates too many people for too many things, and that this does nothing to – and part of it's a racial disparity that people are upset about, and part of the argument here is that we need to rethink the way we think about incarceration. We need to lock up people we're afraid of, not people we're mad at. And the argument is that we're mad at this kid. It's not that we're afraid of him. We don't think he's going to go around
he
doing this.
He killed four people.
Yeah.
It's not a question of whether you're mad at him, you don't like him. It's not personal. You killed four people. The law says –
which was an accident.
He bought the justice he wanted.
He had consequences.
Okay.
This is justice,
Jimmy.
A la carte. Arsalan, you're the man with the JD. Way in here, bro.
Well, you know,
Michael Jimmy, if this kid suffers from affluenza, you know, I have a mad case of vomititis after listening to this story. You know, listen to this riddle. You have a 16-year-old.
Could we move away from the body fluids in this conversation, please? Can I just, as a general standard, could I ask everybody to move away from the body fluids?
You have a 16-year-old rich white kid whose blood alcohol level was 3 times the legal limit, driving 70 miles an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone, killing 4 human beings, and he gets no jail time. Now, let's fill in the blank and say that it was a 16-year-old black kid. Rich kid, poor kid, doesn't matter. Would a 16-year-old black child not get any jail time for killing 4 human beings? You had Michael Vick, who served 2 years in federal prison for killing dogs, but this guy kills 4 human beings and gets no jail time. This just continues to prove that our American legal system is not colorblind.
Pablo.
Pablo jumping in. Yeah, and the thing that... that is not surprising to me, but just as staggering all the same, is that affluenza isn't in the DSM. It's not in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. I'm typically a person who's willing to give a wider berth. I know there's always doubt around mental illness and mental health issues. I'm just not convinced that this is one of them yet, or at the very least, there isn't the scientific basis for it. What it seems to me is a case of a condition, quote-unquote, with terrible branding. And it seems like an Onion article, right? I mean, affluenza, it's not even trying to be weightier or more serious. It's branded terribly, and that still worked. And that's what's mind-blowing to me, is that what threshold do we have here? I mean, it's just insane.
But what about the argument that minors, that we have a different standard for minors? This was, he was prosecuted as a minor, and the argument is that there is a level of adult thinking that we cannot hold them responsible for, and that the purpose of criminal justice at this level, at this age, is rehabilitation. It's not vengeance.
Partially,
what's the argument?
Partially true, given that, you know, the standard that we are using was adopted in the 50s and the 60s. Where a minor really was a minor, and those types of offenses you just didn't have on the list. And that's what I mean by it. When a minor was a minor, you didn't have kids going out, taking their parents' cars and driving and killing four people. You didn't have the level of gun violence and all these other things. So the behavior of these children has changed. They've adopted more adult behavior. So you've seen this transition over time. Away from this idea that, you know, these kids are just kids.
But the argument is that their brains haven't changed. Maybe their opportunities have changed.
You can't sit here and tell me that a 16-year-old kid in 2013 does not know that there is a legal ramification for getting behind the wheel of a car drunk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you final thought on this? I mean, I think you backtracked here because I thought you were saying earlier you thought it was hard but fair. Have you changed your mind about that?
I have changed my mind, Michelle. That happens from time to time. It's one of those things where, you know, I look at this young man, and this defense, it just doesn't hold water. You know, I got to quote my favorite modern psychiatrist, Dr. Chris Rock. Whatever happened is just crazy.
Okay. All right. All right. We're having our weekly barbershop conversation. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel. That's who was speaking just now. Commentator Arsalan Iftikhar, also a civil rights attorney, former chair of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele, and sports writer Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, well, so let's talk sports. Washington's football team coach Mike Shanahan might be the most hated guy in D.C. right now, and that's saying a lot. You know, he decided on Wednesday to bench star quarterback Robert Griffin III for the rest of the season. He explained why. Can we drop that clip?
Sure.
You got to take a look at the risk and reward. And with Robert, I thought that his hits were piling up on him, giving him his toll. And I was afraid that we would set him back. And the only way you realize you're going to get set back is if he gets hurt.
You know what? I am fascinated by how fascinated people are with this story. I mean, that team, whose name is its own controversy, I'll just say, because many people consider it a racial slur, it's like. I was up way too late online shopping, I'll just admit this, and they're still talking about it in the wee hours of the morning, Pablo. Why is that?
Well, it's the best soap opera maybe in America right now, certainly in American pro sports. I mean, the level of politics, of palace intrigue, because it's not just Mike Shanahan, it's Mike Shanahan versus Dan Snyder, who's the owner. Everybody thinks at this point that Mike Shanahan is trying to get himself fired, because he no longer wants to work for Dan Snyder, and this is one way to do it. And then, as if you didn't have enough as the world turnsiness to it, you have Kyle Shanahan, who's the offensive coordinator, who's Mike's son, saying yesterday that he doesn't agree with his dad's decision. And then you have RG3, who's the guy, the star quarterback, who was superimposed into those pseudo Barack Obama hope posters back when he was winning everything last year. So to me, it's every ingredient. The weird thing about this story to me is that despite the dysfunction that brought the Washington football team to the point where they're going to bench RG3 for the rest of the season, despite that dysfunction, I ultimately think that that's the right move, because RG3 at this point If the best thing you could say about your football team going into next year, this is a lost season, if that needs to be clarified.
They're not. They're statistically, it's statistically impossible for them to get to the playoffs. They're what, 3-9? Am
correct.
I right about that?
It's so, just over. And so the only upside you have is the fact that he's going to be healthy. He's been hit 102 times this season, 24 sacks in the last five games.
It's ugly.
You want to get that guy out of there.
What do you think, Michael?
This is
your team, right?
This is my team. And my view of it is a lot of this, from my estimation, begins and ends with the owner. I would not agree that the most hated man in D.C. is Shanahan. I think it's the owner. I think a lot of folks kind of look at the owner and sort of corralling this thing or not corralling this thing and controlling it in a way that needs to be controlled. I think at the end of the day, RG3 should not have even started the season. He should have waited. They should have benched him for the first 6 weeks of the season to give him time to get acclimated and integrated back into the system. There was a lot of pressure from RG and his team to get back on the field. Shanahan got bit once last year by playing him and getting injured and listening to all these other folks who say, well, let him play, including RG himself. And so Shanahan is erring on the side of caution. What I find most fascinating is the coach is saying, all right, you really want to play with me like this? I'm just going to put it all out on the street. So they just started leaking stuff and putting it out there. And so now, the emperor has no clothes on this whole thing. RG3 is going to be benched, and I think he should be. Shanahan will be back next year.
Really? You think so?
I think he will be.
What?
Come on, man.
Okay, we'll see.
Oh, okay. Pablo, what do you think? Oh, wait, Arsenal, you haven't gotten in on this.
Yeah.
I think they're 3-10 now, which, Pablo, correct me. 3-9, 3-10.
Whatever equates to super terrible.
Can I just make one point on why he will be back next year?
Yeah.
Name me a coach in the NFL, the college ranks, who will come here and coach.
Money. They'll play.
No, baby. We've done this. Everyone's got the secret here on the sauce and the money. It ain't worth it.
Listen, this is Mike Shanahan's big middle finger to Dan Snyder as he's walking out the door. You know, you have the Redskins with a bottom five defense, one of the worst special teams in the league, a below average offensive line, no first round picks this year or next because they had to give them up for RG3, bad coaching from Shanahan and an impulsive owner in Dan Snyder. This has been an entire recipe for disaster. I do see him, trying out Kirk Cousins, to try to get some trade value for him. But I literally think that this is his middle finger to Snyder.
Should he play or not play, Arsenal? What do you think?
He should. He's a second-year player. He's healthy. I don't see, if Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts was having a lost season, I don't see, Chuck Pagano benching for the last three games of the year. I think that, a lot of people talk about RG3's, off-season swagger and, his head getting too big with the Adidas, ad campaign of all in for week one and not focusing on his rehab. I think that obviously the Shanahan-RG3 rift has grown throughout the year, and I think that this was Shanahan's sort of swipe at everyone before he leaves the skin.
I like Pablo's argument that this is a soap opera. It's soap opera for guys who don't want to admit they watch soap operas.
Oh, it's what it
but,
is.
That's
it's
true.
The question
perfect.
Is...
Or it could be that RG3's bones rattle when he walks. That brother needs to He does need to take some time off.
Last point. There was a point where Mike Shanahan was asked, do you think he's healthy? Do you think he's 100%? And Mike Shanahan said yes. And Mike Shanahan, who then the next day, I believe, said, I'm going to try to be honest with you people talking to the media. I don't normally try to do that. What do they say?
Many a truth is spoken in jest.
Yes, he sounds like a boxing promoter. But this is he could have said he's not 100%. If he wanted to lie for the benefit of his team, tell people that RG3 isn't 100%, because I don't think he is personally. He was the best athlete at quarterback we've ever seen. Now he's something not resembling anything close to that.
Can I just ask one more thing? Because we only have a couple of minutes left, Pablo. Another issue that broke this week is Major League Baseball wants to ban deliberate collisions at home plate. No more runners and catchers bumping heads. And
how do you tag him out?
That's what I'm wondering. How do you? I don't understand how it works. Pablo, how does that work? What do you do? So, pardon me. It's like asking for some great performance. Pardon me. Step aside. I don't understand. How does that work?
May I tag you now?
Can I touch you?
Listen, I have never seen Major League Baseball act so swiftly to repudiate tradition in the name of safety. What the mechanics of tagging people are, they will change. But the fact that a sport like baseball that's steeped in the old foginess of black and white footage has deigned to do this in the name of medical research and advancement, that's my takeaway. I think it's a great idea, regardless of how awkward it may be to collide at the plate these days.
Can they really do that? Did anybody here play baseball? Did any of you play baseball? No? So
poorly.
I mean, we got to ask him. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all of us, right? At some sort. All right. Well, Jimmy, before we go, we want to give you a minute to give a barbershop shout out.
Yeah. We had a longtime jazz broadcaster. He passed away this week. His name is Bobby Jackson. He was the music director here at my home station, WCPN, for a long, long time. More recently, he hosted a syndicated jazz program called The Roots of Smooth. So the barbershop sends him off.
Yeah, we're sad to lose him. Longtime jazz broadcaster, one of the people kind of lifting up that tradition and keeping it in the forefront. So our condolences to Bobby Jackson's family. So we want to go out on one of his favorite songs, that's Wynton Marsalis's Sister Cheryl. And here with us this week, Jimmy Israel, writer and adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. He was with us, as he said, from NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland. From New York, Pablo Torre, senior writer for ESPN. Arslan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuide.com and senior editor for Islamic Monthly. With us from NPR member station WBEZ in Chicago. Back with us in Washington, D.C., Michael Steele, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, former lieutenant governor of Maryland, and a columnist for The Griot. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Peace.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough barbershop buzz on the radio, look for our barbershop podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.